I hope you're here for the scale up versus scale out presentation. If so, you're in the right place. So there's still a few people coming in. Get started off with a nice geeky joke here. So given we're in a virtual environment, and these days we have virtual processors, virtual applications, we also have virtual dating and all this online dating craze. So this girl had met her love over the internet through this virtual dating world. Her dad was a little concerned about that. So her dad got the guy aside and says, "Okay, what line did you use to capture my daughter here?" He says, "Well, just a standard 56 kV line, you know." So also in the spirit of VM world, we're going to give stuff away. So we'll have a little bit of audience participation. And if you guys are good, we'll pass stuff out. So you may want to reconsider, but that's what you get. The size does matter. Scaling up does work. So how many of you folks are running what you would consider scale-up servers in a virtualization environment today? Great. How many are doing more than 4 sockets? Great. How many are doing more than 8 sockets? Great. Well, the winner. More than 6. Well, we didn't get any more than 8, so. But we did have a few people with more than 4 out there. So I think we'll go ahead and get started here. So we're going to be talking about scaling up virtual environments versus scaling out virtual environments. Give a very brief overview of what Unisys is in case you guys aren't familiar with it. Marketing guys made me do that. And then talk about the business opportunities we have with VI3. You can now scale up, run VMware on scale up servers. So it's opened up some opportunities. We'll go over that a little bit. And then we'll talk a little bit about today's environment, where today people tend to be running on 2-socket, 4-socket servers primarily. And VMware works great in that environment. But there's also some opportunities to make it work better, get some better service quality, along with significant cost savings by scaling up some of your elements. Talk about a test environment. This whole thing started with a large customer who was doing 500 VM instances a quarter, adding additional ones. They were running out of data center space. They were having all the normal problems that happens when you're just rolling in truckloads of small servers. So they asked for a proof point to say what would happen if we tried to run this on one of our scale-up servers. And Unisys has been doing scale-up servers primarily in the database space for quite a few years now. SQL Server and Oracle. In the Wintel environment, we actually have the largest market share of anyone in the scale-up server. So in terms of the basic platform, we have that. But up until now, we weren't really able to make that much use of it in the application tier. So we came up with a test environment, share what that is, the results of that testing, and then an economic analysis, because depending upon how many VMs per socket you can support, pretty much the whole economic analysis is driven off from that. And then there's the conclusions, and then a surprise at the end. So Unisys is worldwide, about $5.7 billion in revenues, a little less than half in the United States, a third in Europe, Africa, and Pacific Asia and South America. So big company worldwide, We do a lot of large systems all over the world. We're 83% services, so we've done virtual deployments on Sun systems. We've provided services to do virtual environments and many different things. We also have the technology in terms of our larger servers to be able to do the scale-up stuff. We have 36,000 people in over 100 countries and over 130 years that we've been helping people. So, on to the presentation. The business opportunity, today VMware is mostly run on smaller servers. Like I said, 2-socket, 4-socket. Some people do an 8-socket servers. So with VI3, you can now run on up to 16 dual core sockets or 32 cores. You can save a significant amount by consolidating virtual environments. The people who are running virtual environments today have seen that effect just going from distributed non-virtualized servers onto small servers and then putting more of those small servers on larger servers. The effect continues and actually compounds as you go on to even larger servers. And some of the savings that you have is through the VMware licensing, the GuestOS licensing, maintenance costs, SAN ports for disconnection, network ports and switches for the network connections. It all takes less of that as you use larger servers. So again, today people tend to run this on relatively small servers. The customer info that we have shows that around 12 VMs per server for a 4-socket server is a typical number. And then one of the most interesting things that we found, we gathered data from a bunch of real customer environments and we saw huge variations in workloads. Over 3 orders of magnitude, which is 1,000 times, from periods where the servers are practically not being used to huge peaks in activities. And these peaks in activities were not predictable as to when they were going to occur or where in the system they were going to occur. There's a lot of, anytime you have humans involved, you have unpredictable behavior and peaks in workload. So somebody is interested in a particular product. People come back from lunch, a stock gets hot. There's a whole bunch of different things that causes peaks and shifts in the workload. The other thing we found is that the servers would run. Yes? So the question has to do with the number of cores that VMware supports, and today they support 32 threads of execution. So 32 cores is one way of looking at it. So 16 dual cores, 4 quad cores. And just like they didn't support 32 a year ago, they may well support more than 32 next year. But you need to talk to them about that. But like everything else in this computer industry, it gets bigger and faster and better and all that stuff. So, today, 32 threads of execution are supported. And the servers run at about 40% average utilization, quite often less, but also there are these peaks in the workload. So people basically tend to do their capacity planning for their servers to allow for some level of the peaks in the workload. But it turns out they don't actually provide for the peaks in the workload that you see when you do a high-resolution view of what the workload is. The net effect of that on the users is that you have periodically a bunch of users that experience longer response times and poor service quality.
Mm-hmm.
So the question was 12 VMs per server and whether that was development environment or production environment. The data that we were looking at here was for large production environment deployment. The number of VMs that you can support on a given system depends upon the workload per VM. But for the workloads that we were looking at in the commercial environment, the number that that they typically use was about 12. And this just graphically shows that dramatic variation in workload over time, with dramatic valleys and even more dramatic peaks in the workload over time. And any time that you have these peaks in the workload, if you don't have the capacity available to handle the peak, you'll have a decline in service quality. And that means poor response times, unhappy users, or just a slowdown in the productivity of your system. So the theory, we were looking at this stuff, and given that we've been doing scale-up servers for a long time and we're familiar with what happens when you have additional capacity, we were looking at what it took to handle that peak workload on the system. So if you look at a 20 times peak instead of a 1,000 times peak, which is a more conservative view, but you have to pick something to shoot at, the base level that you can run at is 5% if the peaks are going to go to 100%. So if you're actually going to design the system to be able to handle the peaks that will occur, your base utilization level can only be about 5%. Now, if you have a four-socket server and you can only run at 5%, that means you need four sockets of processing power to handle the peaks on a given four-socket server. On a 16-socket server, that's four sockets of performance to handle that peak workload is only 25% of the system. If you have 16 sockets of processing power available to handle a peak that would saturate a four-core processor or a four-socket system, you can handle that with 25% of a 16-socket system. That means that you could run the 16-socket system at a base workload of 75% and still get the same service quality as you can get with a four-socket server. This was all the theory. And if this, in fact, was true, where you could run at a higher utilization level and still get better response times and better service quality, that means you could get savings out of being able to make better use of your resources. So this just shows graphically, you know, the blue is what you could run in terms of base utilization. The burgundy or purple is what you need to be able to provide for capacity to handle the peaks in the workload to get the service quality that you're looking for. So again, the four processor system run at a 5% base workload, the 16 processor system at a 75% workload. So much for the theory. So the next thing we did is we hooked up some systems and we gathered data about what the customer environments were. There was a particular large customer, like I said, who was doing a dramatic expansion. They had AMD four-socket servers. Like all of you guys, you have a broad range of stuff that's actually installed. This was representative. And then we used a Unisys ES7001 16-socket server with a 3 gigahertz dual-core Intel processor as the comparison system. Then we used 40 other servers to drive the workload. So physically, we had the drivers over there. We had the application server component with the virtualized servers, the internal switching, the database server that was involved, the disk storage. There's some other components down here which are used to complete the transactions. The workload that we used was based upon the TPC app benchmark, which does a series of orders and credit card verifications using simulated third-party servers. So that's what the servers down there are. This TPC app benchmark, it includes a managed environment with .NET, web servers, file servers, some small database components, and then web services with XML and SOAP for the interfaces. So it's a modern environment, if you will. We modified the benchmark to simulate the peaks and workloads, and you'll see some graphs of what the peaks and valleys look like. We also modified the benchmark to handle the amount of disk and network throughput that we got from the customer data. So we changed the I/O rates and the network rates by changing some of the parameters within the benchmark. And because we modified the benchmark, these results are not comparable to a real TPC app benchmark result. So the workload, we had 280 kilobytes per second of disk throughput, 555 kilobytes per second of network throughput per VM. The workload has variations of over an order of magnitude, this 19.5 number that I talked about before. Again, not nearly as much as we saw in data from the real environment of 1,000 times, but it does both demonstrate the effect and it makes it a little more believable. So the same workload variation is applied to 12 VMs of the 16-socket Unisys system, and we use ESX 3.0 for the virtual environment. Each VM has a complete instance of this benchmark. We didn't try and partition and segregate it. That way we just did a complete instance of the benchmark in each VM. And the methodology we used was to increase the number of VMs until the response time criteria weren't met. So there was a 1 second maximum response time for the web service transactions. So we just increased VMs until we exceeded that. So, audience participation time.
So what VMs do you increase? You increase the clients that generate load. That's what you increase.
Yeah, each of the clients that puts a load on the system has a number of emulated browsers which look like users. So the way that we increased the load was by increasing the number of emulated browsers that were feeding into the system. So, how many of you folks use virtualization for transaction processing systems? Great. Heads up. Cool. Okay. People were starting to look a little after lunchy here. So we did this. We increased the number of VMs on the 4-socket system. And this was both a validation of whether our workload was representative of what customers were seeing. Do you have a question? Yeah, the question was any consideration given of AMD versus Intel. The results I'm presenting here that will also be available online are versus an AMD processor server. There's a white paper. You can get it if you go by the Unisys booth. It's actually Intel 4-socket versus Intel 16-socket on the same platform to eliminate some of those variables. The surprise at the end, you'll hear some more stuff that we're running on. But it turns out, even though the AMD processors are nominally faster than the Intel processors, these other effects of having more capacity available far swamp that effect. Question? Yeah.
So on the server
Right. So the question or the clarification here is, are we growing the workload per VM or are we growing the number of VMs on the server, right? And so there's two parts to this. One is we looked at this peak workload and with a constant workload per VM, how many VMs can we support? And that's what this represents. The second part of things is, okay, given that number of VMs, then we vary the workload per VM and see what the effect of that is. So this is the part of the testing where we were keeping the workload fixed and increased the number of VMs to see how many VMs the system could support at the peaking workload.
Fixed per
VM. Yes. So as you can see, with 12 VMs, we could meet the 1 second response time. With 16 VMs, we exceeded the 1 second response time. Normal way that, you know, response time curves go up on the 4-socket system. On the 16-socket system, going from 92 to 96 to 100, when you went up to 100 VMs, it exceeded the 1 second response time criteria, but it was able to handle the 96 VMs with the peaking workload. So the upshot of this was, since the 4-socket system could handle 12 VMs, the 16-socket system could handle 96 VMs. We could handle 3 VMs per socket on the 4-socket system, 6 VMs per socket on the 16-socket system. So that's kind of the baseline going into looking at the effect of the changing workload per VM. But just this first part is we could handle twice the VMs per socket on the larger server. And you heard in the keynote about some of the capabilities of being able to scale up VMs. Some of our illustrious competitors have done sessions where they've said that scaling up is a good thing. As far as I know, this is the only real data that shows what happens, what can happen when you use the scale-up approach. So the next thing we did is we changed the workload. Started off on the 4-socket commodity system, going from the low level of roughly 5%, it's about 7% here average, up to 100%, back down again. You get about a 40% average utilization while you're doing this. But just handling that peak workload maxes out the 4-socket server. On the 16-socket server, they were running at a base workload of around 75%, and the same amount of peak workload added to that, turns out it takes us up to a little over 90%, but it easily handles that additional workload. So once again, both in terms of just the base response time and in terms of the utilization of the system, you can see how having the extra capacity available allows you to handle more VMs effectively. So again, 96 VMs on the 16 socket and the 12 VMs on the 4-socket system. And the base workload being around 7% on the 4-socket and around 70% on the 16-socket system. So if we look at what the economic impact is of being able to get better utilization of your resources, again, looking at to support 96 VMs, takes one of these ES7001 systems or 8 of the Optron-based 4-socket dual-core systems.
Yes?
So the question is how many NICs are allocated per socket. That's in the slide or two. But the network, the memory, the I/O, the disk subsystem were all configured so they weren't the bottleneck on each on either of the servers. Hold that thought for just a couple of slides. Okay. Question?
The other thing, though, too, is on the offer on the site, the socket is not the highest skill we were doing. So you're kind of like comparing your latest and greatest with a previous generation.
So the commander, the question there was the AMD systems can scale up further and are faster. So we're comparing our latest and greatest to some old AMD stuff.
It would be a more fair comparison to compare that against, say, 8 socket to a, you know, hyper-transport environment. It would be exactly what 26 is great.
Right.
So the...
Right. So the comment is an 8 socket AMD server would look better than the 4 socket AMD server.
Right.
And that actually just validates the whole thing, that the more stuff you put on, the better it looks.
Right. Oh,
right. Right. And the surprise at the end, just a little hint here, is we looked at more current technology on both sides, because there's actually more current technology Intel available also. But the net, I mean, each time you release something new, the numbers shift some. But the concept stays the same. Yeah, at the risk of doing some marketing stuff, which I'm not, the measured reliability on the ES7000 system is 99.996 uptime, 6% uptime, which is like 8 hours a year of actual measured downtime on several hundred systems in production environments without, and that's the complete system and software, but without any high availability stuff. Right. So comments here about availability and how do you update in this environment. Basically, the larger servers are just as compatible with the VMware vMotion abilities to maintain the availability of your system. So, you know, if you have today 400 servers, 400 four-processor or four-socket servers, and this would allow you to have some fraction of that in ES7000 servers, you still have all of the high availability capabilities that you have today for doing updates, for going through...
But for this case, you're going to want ES7000.
Right.
If it's not big enough to fill through ES7000, you're in a kind of difficult position because you don't have high availability.
Actually, you can partition the ES7000 system in as small as four socket chunks. So even if you have a very small environment, you can still configure the system for high availability. And we have N+1 cooling and power and hot pluggable this and that. So it is possible to configure the system for high availability. No. So the comment there was you could handle the peaks on two of the four socket boxes. The problem is that you can't handle the base workload on just those two servers. because you can only run them at the base workload to handle your base workload, which is most of your workload. So economically, like I said, there's the VMware cost, the guest operating system cost. I'll go through each of these. VMware cost is per processor. If you have twice the number of VMs per processor, VMware cost is half with the scale-up approach. The SAN connectivity, use 6 host adapters on the scale-up versus 16 on the scale-out. So the host adapters, the cables, the switch ports, there's a 63% cost savings there. The network connectivity, you asked about the number of NICs that we have. In this case, we had 4 NICs per 4-socket system, or 1 NIC per socket. We didn't try to artificially limit the capabilities of the 4-socket box. But the net effect was a 75% cost savings while maintaining redundant network connections for both the production environment and the control of the system. Physical system management, because you're managing one physical environment instead of 8 of them. For upgrades, maintenance, backup, you have 1 ESX host versus 8 ESX hosts. There's a 78% savings. Yes?
What's the square footage that
the question is, what's the square footage and what's the power and cooling requirements? And I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
There is a power and cooling savings component to this. You can basically do this with 1 rack instead of about 2.1 racks. Important thing to consider here is that, like, this cost was based upon an outsourcing data center's cost per physical server, the actual quoted cost from outsourcing data center. So your data center will be different. One major factor is what's the amount of cooling per square foot that your data center supports, because that interacts with the amount of square footage you'll require for your solution. So when you look at actually deploying this, and I'm sure none of you guys would just take this and go pound out there and buy, you know, a dozen of these 16-socket servers, you actually need to look at the application environment, the variation that you have. You need to look at your data center environment, and need to do an analysis for what the savings would be for your environment. The real point of this is that there is the opportunity for the savings. Like I said before, if you only need 16 sockets worth of performance, and you want to have a higher level of availability than the 99.996, you can partition the system into 2 8 bys and have that availability. If you have larger systems, you can use the same kind of VMware and vMotion high availability capability that you have with smaller servers. It's compatible with that. The 16-socket server with the 64 gig of memory, the adapters, the network cards, all that stuff is around 200,000. So it's a similar cost to the 8 4-socket systems, but the cost of the server is actually outweighed by the other operational costs in the system. Yes? You can handle on a 16-socket system up to 256 gigabytes of memory. Well, with the 2 gig DIMMs, you can handle 128 gigabytes in a 16-socket system. Whatever number of slots that equates to. the guest operating system, again, the savings here is also very dependent upon your licensing relationships and whether or not you have corporate licensing agreements. One thing to consider with data centers starting this fall, you have unlimited virtual licenses available. And the crossover point is at about 8 Windows instances. So if you can put 128 or 96 instances onto a server and pay for the equivalent of 8 instances, you get a much larger payback than this. How many VMs? The breakpoint is about 8, where it becomes more cost effective to switch over to the new data center model. I'm not sure. Yeah, you still need 8 of the Enterprise Edition licenses versus 1 of the unlimited data center licenses. So that would make sense. Yeah. There's another question back here. So overall, the overall cost savings with all these different pieces, and power and cooling was a 58%. Savings. There's another level of detail behind this that says how much space, how much power and cooling, all that stuff. That was a 58% savings there. Overall, was a 35% savings. The question was, what about the soft costs, people cost, operations cost to run the environment? The only thing that we included regarding that was the cost of maintaining the additional physical servers. And again, the outsourcing center cost kind of thing that was quoted was $10,000 a year per physical server. You still have to manage as many VMs as you had to manage before. You still have to do whatever kind of DB manager. I guess you'd have a little simpler network management. But the only cost we really tried to include here was the cost of having to handle fewer physical platforms. So, conclusions: can handle basically twice the VM density per socket due to this ability to handle the peaks in the workloads. We can handle the peaks easily that would max out the 4-socket server while running at a much higher utilization. Provides a 35% lower cost per VM versus deploying on the 4-socket commodity system. So there's a big opportunity for cost savings. Again, you need to look at your situation, your workloads, your data center, your operations environment to see whether your savings would be more or less than this. So, breaking news. Comment was made that technology rolls forward, which it does. It's a good thing. Otherwise, we'd be out of business probably. But anyway, there's a new generation of Intel processors available, the Tulsa processor, and a 16-socket system using this same workload methodology could handle 128 VMs versus the 12 VMs. You can point out there's a newer level of AMD processor that's going to be available. That'll ratchet that up. So the numbers, the variation will go up and down, but overall, you still have the same effect and you still have the opportunity for a significant cost savings here. So the question is Unisys completely committed to the scale-up platform?
Not scale-up.
Completely committed to Intel
scale-up.
Scale-up.
Yes. Since Intel
is not generally done without your help. Well, we've been doing scale-up Intel platforms for many years very successfully.
And those are 150 watts per chip.
So anyway, yeah, Unisys is committed to Intel.
I'm
right.
Okay.
And Intel's also getting better. Time goes on. And even today, like on the performance side, they actually are doing much better with this new processor. Power-wise, there's more stuff coming out. So basically, from a Unisys perspective, there's not a sufficient advantage to go to an AMD architecture for us to do that. These other higher-level effects far outweigh those effects. So, if you'd like additional information, there is a white paper that talks about this stuff in more detail. I know people were playing with calculators and graphing stuff, and you can actually look at the white paper and graph to your heart's content. But there's also a lot more details about the configuration, some best practices as to how to configure systems and what parameters to set. Again, you can go to the Unisys booth 818 to get that. There will be an update to this white paper out within a month or so, or within the month, that has the new the Tulsa information in it. That's myself, Jerry Buggert, at unisys.com. You can contact me, Ted Buting, on the business side. So, any further questions? So the question. There's a couple things. The question was, what happens if you have a cluster of four-socket systems? And the comparison point actually here is to a cluster of 8 four-socket AMD systems. And the thing about DRS and vMotion, it takes, basically with an SMP system, you get instantaneous applicability of that additional capacity to handle these peaks in the workload. With DRS and vMotion, you have to recognize that there is a overcapacity issue somewhere in the cluster, identify where to move move the work to the other system. By that time, the workload peak may well have already passed. So, again, you need to look at the characteristics of your workload. If you have, you know, some significant change to your base workload, DRS and vMotion works great to automatically move around that workload. This ability to handle the instantaneous peaks in the workload, it doesn't really help you with. And the issue about comment was made that with Intel you can't scale beyond 4, and with AMD you can scale almost linearly up. With the Unisys servers, we've demonstrated with benchmarks for quite a few years, and in real customer environments, we can scale up to 32 sockets with Intel very effectively, and our architecture supports that. So the question was, how does Unisys handle, or how does the certification of VMware handle on this system? VMware has one of our systems as a reference platform for doing their testing and certification on. Just like other people's platform, if there's a significant change to the reference platform, they get a new reference platform. If it's a minor change, like an update to a processor, we basically run a set of tests under VMware's control guidance and give them the results. And then, so at some point there'll be a significant change to the platform. They'll get a new reference platform. Yeah. Right.
Question. I know the first thing my manager is going to say is, I have all my eggs in one basket. I'm sure you've heard that before. What do you think?
So, question is, what do you do about the all eggs in one basket? And the answer is, you have more than one basket. As I said before, you can partition the system if you want higher availability and not have everything running on one single system. Depends upon what the size of your total workload is. If you need half a dozen 16-socket systems, it's totally compatible with the VMware high availability. Unisys and their RTI environment has some additional disaster recovery capabilities across long distances that is also compatible with this. But basically, the answer to not having all your eggs in one basket is to not put all your eggs in one basket.
Okay. Now, if I partition, I lose some of this saving stuff because now I have essentially quads or eight ways.
Right. Okay. Yeah. If you you don't lose the power cooling savings. You actually do need to you do need to have more capacity available because you're running in smaller servers. So, if at some point you only need a 4-socket server, you should just buy a 4-socket server. If you need to deploy, 1,000 VMs, you should definitely be looking at this kind of technology. If you need to deploy a couple hundred VMs, maybe yes, maybe no. Any other questions, comments? So your statement was that in other sessions you heard you should only handle about 12 VMs per host? 12 SAN LUNs per host? That's totally dependent upon the ability of your system to support additional IO capabilities. In the case of this system, we have 8 gigabytes of IO throughput, the ability to handle it very well. Yes. And Unisys also has a partnership with VMware. A lot of these questions about VMware scalability scales very well today, actually, on this Intel-based scale-up platform. There's also the opportunity to do it better and make it bigger. So we'll be working with them on that. So, does anybody want a... All right. Okay, thank you very much, everyone. Again, stop by the booth if you want more info.